Welcome to the Digital Dissection podcast, hosted by Mark Benke and myself, Joe Vinipal. We're two pop culture nerds dedicated to celebrating our favorite properties and talking to the creative minds and personalities that make them great. You might learn something new about pop culture history or rediscover the recent past. Follow us on social media for weekly pop culture content, where we're always dissecting.
Joe.
Yes, Mark.
Oh, hey, Joe. So we've had writers, actors, some have even been on like Broadway doing that kind of stuff.
Very true.
But we haven't had any singers, like traditional singers, have we?
I don't think anyone who's actually pursued singing, no. Like, I feel like we've had people who've done like a song and a dance thing and then like an acting thing, and they focused more on the acting bit than the singing, but no, never a full-time singer.
I was going to say like Noah Watts, obviously he's a musician and he plays the tunes and all that, but I mean, he's also, you know, just as well known for his acting. So it's like when we had the opportunity to speak with the voice of a generation, Mr. Jason Page, AKA the singer of the very first Pokemon theme song for the anime. Mm-hmm. It was like, how do we harness this pop culture energy? How do we handle this? Because man, dude's always been a spark plug. And I remember seeing his social media years ago when I first started like getting into Pokemon Go, and like all that nostalgia is coming back and everybody's listening to the music again. And then he freaking covers it right when the game first comes out, and like people are in tears. It's incredible.
Well, I mean, that you calling it the song of our generation, I think is pretty accurate. it is something that just like, I don't know, as soon as it comes on, like you just know shit's about to go down with that that drum solo, like winding things up. And then all of a sudden you just get hit with those strong vocals and you are inspired from the get-go.
Yeah. Seriously, like when I was going back and watching the original anime, here I was going like, I'm not really sold on anime. You were trying really hard to get me to watch this stuff, and I could not bring myself to watch any of it. But when I came to, you know, the Pokemon series, and that song comes on, and then it's like suddenly you're above yourself, watching yourself watch the show, and you're just like, where have I astral projected? Where am I right now?
and for that Indigo League season, not gonna lie, this is very much like the opening theme is very much like the Will Smith track to a Will Smith movie, and is one of the best parts of the whole thing, if not the best part of the whole thing, because I don't know how like the Indigo League managed to pull you into any sort of anime, because I definitely watched it as a child, sometimes like out of spite, like this Ash Ketchum, he's not my kind of guy. He's kind of a bad trainer to be honest. He has one really good Pokemon and he insists on using one of his worst Pokemon the most. I mean, hint, Pikachu, like, come on, like you play the game. Even if you were to double those like special attack stats, nothing special.
He's like the Ghostbusters. He's never had to produce anything. You know, he doesn't work in the private sector. And when it comes to Jason Page, I think like a lot of us, when we heard that song initially, like maybe we didn't think a whole lot about it and or who was behind it, I should say. But then, like, over time, and you know that my relationship with, like, the Pokemon franchise largely grew after Pokemon Go. It was really just, like, pedestrian before that point. But when I saw him singing the song in the booth, you know, like almost just about 20 years later, and he's just belting out those tunes, and I'm like, you can just see the energy that Jason Page has as an entertainer. And we kind of talked about this a little bit with him. Yeah. But it's like that energy for him is a constant. Like, you know, if we had some kind of renewable energy that could harness Jason Page. I mean, we wouldn't be using fossil fuels anymore.
No, he's basically the equivalent of taking a cat and duct taping it to like buttered bread and letting go, and it just spins at infinite energy. That's Jason Page and the level he puts off. And I think what you'll be pleasantly surprised through this interview that you'll be listening to here in a little bit is just how much he's actually in your life. Because while we have been talking up the Pokemon theme quite a bit, I'm not gonna lie, like when he started talking about all the things he did, I was surprised that that was him. Like, no way, that was you. He named like jingle after like commercial after commercial, and I had no idea it was him that he was doing all this. So even if like Pokemon may not be your cup of tea and you're listening to this episode, listen to him talk and then wait for him to just bolt out a jingle or belt out a jingle, and you're gonna be like, no shit, it was this guy.
Yeah, the artistry just kind of it springs out of him, and I've seen very few people who just kind of harness this, right? Like he's truly a performer, and it comes across too. If you follow him on social media, by the way, which this program does, you can see just how transformative he can be no matter where he is. It doesn't matter if it's in the United States, doesn't matter if he's over in Europe. I mean, he is a world travel entertainer. And people recognize him at all of these conventions. He's getting invited all over the place. So it's really cool to connect with him and honestly kind of touch that piece of pop culture history that, I mean, you just never really thought, holy shit, I'm talking to this person right now. It was just so cool. I was kind of beside myself the whole time. So it was a fun time, dude. And I never take these things for granted. It's always so cool to see people's process, to learn from them, and in Jason's case, also how he tells us when this journey began for him. Like he just kind of knew from an early age, I'm gonna be singing, I'm gonna be performing, this is my thing. He just had it figured out, and he's been living that life ever since. So.
Yeah, and the story he tells over of like natural musicians and how he, along with all of us, kind of get into music. One thing was ringing in the back of my head the whole time that I wanted to say, but I didn't want to interrupt the mojo going on, is that when he talks about like when we firstly really start like getting into music and getting into singing at a young age, and he tells the story of where that happens, all I can think in my mind is him stopping crying and being like, "Hey, guy, the acoustics in here suck. Can you do something about that?" So when you get to that part of the story in the interview today, it'll make more sense. You'll hopefully be laughing with us.
It was reminiscent of the ShamWow guy, where it's like when he's recording him cleaning the stuff up, he's like, "Hey, you getting this, asshole? You getting this?"
Oh
Zoom
my
in, come
God.
on now. Yeah,
Yep.
so
And don't even get me started on Slap Chop. We'll be
no.
laughing the whole night.
Hey, for one, it's not called the slap chop. It's called the fucking slap chop. Okay, that's. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, we appreciate you. We appreciate you joining us here. And without further ado, we bring you Jason Page. Welcome back, pop culture nerds. We get to talk to a lot of interesting folks on this show. And tonight, we get to sit down with an absolute pop culture legend. He is a singer, writer, record producer, and actor who is very well known for the English version of the Pokemon television series, the first season's theme. We welcome to the show Jason Page. Jason, how are we doing?
What's up, gentlemen?
Yeah,
Good,
how we
good. How
doing?
are you?
Hey, Good.
we're doing great.
Yeah, we're happy to get time with you here. And where are you actually talking to us from today?
I'm talking to you from Thousand Oaks, from the valley in Los Angeles,
Ooh.
inside of the Tesla. This is very nicely blurred out behind me. But it's great. The studio environment is incredible. I can hear everything perfectly. It's got a great microphone. When 20 years ago, when I was in LA, I was doing a session in my house and I was too loud for the
Oh,
roommate and
cool.
the people that he had over. So I took my computer down. It was the first days of people having broadcasting their wireless internet. I drove to the this spot where I knew I could get an internet signal. I put the computer right down beside me, plugged in my it was a Pontiac Vibe, and I bought this Pontiac Vibe because it had a power, regular power plug right in the dashboard. Plugged in my computer, plugged in my microphone, started singing, "When you get nausea, heartburn, indigestion, upset stomach, diarrhea," in the car. And then, you know, I mean, obviously you record in headphones when you record, because you don't want the music to blast back into the microphone. But after I recorded, I listened to the playback in the car, and it was the perfect environment. Anybody that has a studio and does music, you always do your mix and then you go out to the car and listen to it and see how it sounds. But I was already in the car singing. Mm-hmm. So I developed this thing called CarStar, which was, I would do all these jingles and somebody would do backgrounds on somebody's record. They jump in the back seat. We put headphones on, a microphone was hanging right here in the center. And plus it's a dead, dry, really good vocal booth right here. So it has all the qualities for great recording and monitoring. And this is one of the first podcasts I'm doing from the car. So I must sound really good. And you guys sound great. So here you go.
Yeah, you sound great. And I mean, that sounds like kind of like the ultimate road trip scenario. If you just get a band together, get the crew going and just rocking out tunes in the best way.
Jingles, that jingle I just sang was actually recorded in the car.
That's awesome.
Which I don't know if you guys are familiar with that Pepto-Bismol.
Oh, definitely. Oh, yep, absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, that's me. That's one of the many, you know, greatest hits. The greatest hits.
I was gonna say,
Subway, eat fresh. Another greatest hit.
Oh, you know.
Yeah. I was gonna say, I feel like I should be at least a key stakeholder in Pepto-Bismol based off of my whole stomach situation. But
somebody promised me they're gonna bring me Pepto-Bismol bottles to autograph. You know, my vocal sessions as a vocal acrobat span the gamut of all different kinds of things, from movies to background singing to jingles to, you know, TV theme songs. Mm-hmm. And like I did a song in Rick and Morty. Somebody brought me a Rick and Morty. Somebody brought me a Deadpool disc, a Deadpool DVD game, a Deadpool game. Sorry, it wasn't a DVD. It was the game. I didn't even remember that I had done a voiceover in Deadpool, but you know, there's lots of other things besides Pokemon on the Jason Page greatest hits. That could you know, the autographs can be delivered.
Yeah.
Can you feel it? Oh, Coca-Cola.
Wow.
Coca-Cola. I mean, you know, it goes on. The list goes on and on. Anyway, not to talk about myself.
Oh, no.
I mean, we prefer you talk about yourself. We were going to talk about, since you've gone back, you're currently in the Tesla era. You talked about the Pontiac Vibe days.
Yeah.
Actually wondering, you know, even pre-Pontiac Vibe, what got you started in the world of music, and how did you get to where you are today?
Well, we all are musical beings. If you've seen a lot of these videos on Instagram and TikTok where guys will just take somebody screaming in their car. And they'll musicalize actual speech. Well, I've known that I was a musical being from the moment I came out of the womb. It's just a C sharp. Well, actually, I don't have perfect pitch, but it's a long, straight tone that we piercingly sing when we come out of the womb. It's music. And of course, you know, much of our early years are musically paved. That's how we learn how to sing, how to talk, so how to read, how to spell. It's kindergarten. We're singing more than we're talking.
Yeah.
So it's really about music being stopped for most people because of, I don't know, the annoying the parents. Stop it with that noise. What are you doing? And then we kind of get self-conscious about this natural free expression of the musicality of our existence. And it gets interrupted. And then it gets picked up again when we kind of become adults and we can choose what we want to do. People choose music because it's joyful, and the same reason that children are taught for that, with music because it's joyful. So I think I had a little bit of an interruption, but not so much because my parents encouraged me to keep on singing. So I sang and wrote songs as an 8 year old. I remember writing songs when I was 7 and 8, and then going to the High School Music and Art for voice, which is the theme. I want to live forever.
Yeah.
Hi, mm-hmm. Hi. That's the school that the movie is based on. And I was a voice major, and that got me more formal training. But really, the joy that I found outside of the restrictive educational environment was what helped me expand into all of the things that I loved and that I did with love and with joy. The theory in school was not so joyful. It was forced on us. We had to take theory, and I think it, you know, it led me away from that rigid structure. Even though it's nice to learn some technique, I think we run the risk of deterring people from actually experiencing the full breadth of what music can be because we force them into these boxes when we educate them in music. I know that most of the people in my high school that were voice majors are not singing anymore. And it's pretty much because they beat it out of them. You know, when you force your kids into those piano lessons, I have so many stories. Oh, yeah, I had to take lessons when I was a kid. I don't play anymore. But they'll sit down and they'll like a robot be able to plunk out a song. Like, what? You don't play anymore and you can do that? Yeah, because they lost the joy because it was enforced, as opposed to a more self-directed learning and joyful pursuit of craft. I mean, you know, that's why things get done in such a beautiful way, because people have this imagination and this joy to pursue architecture. And that's why the Hollywood Hills and Los Angeles has got all these amazing structures, you know, amazing art, amazing.
Yeah,
technologies are done because of people's imagination and their joy and love for it. So that's how I got started. I came out of the womb singing, and I just haven't stopped since.
You know, the joy is definitely something that you can see across like your social media. Clearly, you're having fun. And one thing I was always curious about was how you went from getting educated about music to then doing beatboxing, you know, with Aerosmith. Like, how did you discover that talent? Because I feel like a lot of us think we can beatbox, but then we just realize, no,
they're professionals. Yep.
Well, you know, I'm actually having that very experience now, because the guys that are beatboxing nowadays are, I considered myself the top floor beatboxing of a 10-floor building up until about 2015. And in the past 7-8 years, the beatboxers online have shared so much insight into the craft with each other that they are doing things that I can't. It's a 100-floor building, and now I'm like on the 15th floor. I got a little better, but they have just gone so far. And it's because of social media and the ability to share all these new insights into this craft, which is basically a language that's your own unique language and your own unique way to make these blah. You know, so I'm trying to gather some of these new sounds and these new techniques. But back in the day, the reason that I started beatboxing was because I was in a band and I was like, yo, play. just give me do. You know, you're just telling each other what to do. And you play do 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 do, and you play, you know, and you're just communicating the parts to the band members, and it's the easiest way to do it. And then you heard like Rozelle, and you heard Fat Boys, and but there was very few influences back there to really help us expand as beatboxers. That's why I was the top floor, because I was doing all kinds of cool shit when my creative partner and jingle partner Russ Irwin auditioned for Aerosmith. Mm-hmm. I went with him on the audition, and he booked a gig, and he said, hey, come to the show in Hartford, one of my first shows. And I said, all right, I went to the show, and he was like, come on backstage. Stevie and I are going to warm up. He's warming up with Steven Tyler. La ga ha ga la ga ha ga. La ga ha ga la ga ha ga. I started beatboxing during the vocal warm-up. Matter of fact, there's a video of this. I recently came across old videotapes where I was just hanging out. Steven's videotaping, I'm videotaping. We're back and forth. I'm beatboxing during the vocal warm-up, and he's like, yo, mm-hmm. that shit is so great. Oh my God. Like this is 1997-ish, 98, around then. Mm-hmm. Still heard of beatbox, but not really been around a lot of beatboxers. And he was like, you got to come out stage and do that. You got to come out stage and do that. I was like, what? What do you mean? Really? You're kidding. And I just kind of was there, and he was like, yeah, I'm going to tell Joey. And he went and told the drummer. He said, at this one part during the song, I'm going to bring Jason out, and he's going to beatbox. And I was like, all right. And then I still didn't know if he was going to remember, if it was really going to happen. And during Pink, he came over to the side of the stage. He kind of conducted the band to stop and the drummer to stop, and then I beatboxed, and then they came back in, and he kind of was inside of the stage where Russ was playing keyboards, and he passed me a microphone and pulled me out, and 20,000 people lost their minds because there's a dude beatboxing in an Aerosmith concert. Like, it was incredible. So that kind of led to doing that a numbers of times during whenever there was a live show and I was there. He'd pull me out to do that. And then a couple of recordings that they did in studio. I beatboxed on some songs. And then they did Howard Stern and WNEW promoting the song. And they called me and Russ in to just to do that. And, the rest is history. And it became one of Howard Stern's top 10 moments in the Howard Stern show history, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. I guess I'm kind of with you on this, Jason, where you have to wonder, like, how much of this is, like, is this a dream? You know, is this, like, am I in this moment right now?
these things kind of happen to me in various ways throughout my life. Just last week, Steve Aoki is the new, you know who Steve Ooh. Aoki is?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just the DJ is the new rock star, and I didn't really know very much about him when I did a Pokemon event that he was opening some packs at, and then after that I went to see him at Hakkasan in Vegas and was like, oh my God, this is who this guy is. I started looking him up, but I had no idea how huge this guy is mm-hmm. basically Aerosmith. He's the Aerosmith level DJ. And he did an event at this event called Collecticon last week, or two weeks ago. And I met him backstage. He was like, yo, you're the Pokemon guy, right? I'm on your turf here. Yo, I'm going to play Pokemon. You want to come up and sing it? And I was like, what? All right. Yeah. I mean, I already sang it, but sure. I got remixes. I do. Sometimes I sing the Pokemon theme song. Then I do mm-hmm. a remix of it. So, I'm ready to go. He does his set, and of course he launches into the Pokemon theme song and mm-hmm. pulls me out, and I'm fucking right there on the stage with Steve Aoki. It's just like nice. Random, not mm-hmm. planned, not paid. These are all unplanned, unpaid appearances. Yeah. And the love of it is really what drives it all. He loves Pokemon, so he plays the theme song. Unplanned, unpaid, and uncredited. That's pretty much mm-hmm. the way to do things in the most pure way.
Yeah, and since you, we were always gonna, I had the idea of bringing up the Pokemon theme song because it is just so iconic, and I kind of want to know a little bit more about your process when it comes to writing things like that, because when you look at the source material in Japanese, I'm pretty sure they're just singing about what's happening on screen during the theme song, but yours is the one that just, you know, like transcends the original. So how do you actually start to think of like your lyrics for your songs and your jingles?
Well, the ones that I write, a lot of times there's already a brief. The company already knows what they want. Pokemon already had a theme song in Japan. They brought it to the States and hired 4Kids to do the English version. 4Kids hired Paradise Music, Rave Music, to do the music for the English version. Rave Music hired me. So they get a brief. They wrote the song, but they wrote it based on the spec that Pokemon gave in the brief, and in it was "Catch him if you can, Pokemon." "Catch him if you can" was the word, so you sort of get an outline of what they want the song to be. Young, anthemic, inspirational, about catching Pokemon, but you know, they kind of kept it very. Most of it is generalized, which is great because the song can apply outside of Pokemon. You could change Pokemon to anything, and the song really works, which is great. But oftentimes that's how you get the inspiration. Well, you research the product, you see what the essence of the product is, and then you write something that supports it. I have written numbers of jingles for other companies. One thing's coming out very soon. It's called Bubblegum Kids. It's an NFT that is made real. They're making bubblegum and putting it in stores now. Bubblegum Kids. And I did a jingle for them. I did a jingle for another company that is doing right well. I just got a communication from them today. It was called Devolution, and now it's called Devomon, I think. They changed their name. And it's basically a blockchain-based Pokemon-type game with a metaverse. And the theme song, you can check out the theme song. The lyrics echo the idea of the game and what it does and the adventures that people go on. But yeah, you want to capture the essence of the product, and you want to satisfy the client and what they already have, the ideas they already have going for them. So Pokemon has had, 23 different theme songs that have all tried to capture the energy, and the OG just does it best, I think.
I was going to say, like, Johto did all right, and I think that's been the best one since yours, and Johto does fall short. Now, I do have to say, like, you've, like, amazing career. Like, you, as soon as you start singing anything that you have for us, like, we immediately know what you're talking about. We've all heard these before, and they become staples, the work that you do. So I guess I think what I'd like to know is, like, you know, what do you want to do next? Like, what's still on the horizon for you that you can talk about?
I'm trying to have my own original music become staples as well. And it is by connecting to the things and the emotions and expressing myself as an artist, as I always have throughout my career anyway. It's just that my expression as a vocal gymnast for other products has garnered more attention than my expression as an artist. But now it's a new paradigm for the independent artist and even the signed artist. The social media tools and the way that things are distributed is different. So, you know, that Richmond, north of Richmond guy, Oliver Anthony, huge, just independent YouTube, social media, and tens of millions, hundreds of millions, I think, at this point, of views and downloads and streams. So, you know, that's kind of what I've released with a couple of DJs, and I'm trying to go the DJ route, and being pulled out on the stage with Steve Aoki is a giant step in that direction, because the DJs are playing music, and the DJs and the new music that I've been creating is kind of an EDM rock style. So it fits right into the club and the festival scene. I've been doing remixes with some big DJs in the Netherlands, and going to be doing some with some DJs here, Decadon. Hopefully we can get Aoki to remix one as well. with my voice, because the one he was playing was not my voice remix. Mm-hmm. In that environment, the DJs play Sweet Caroline. Da, ba,
da. Yeah.
And they play, buddy, you're a boy making big noise, playing in the street, gonna be a big man someday. They play and they play, just a small town girl.
All right.
They're playing all these songs that I can actually execute live.
Yeah.
With you know, some sound alike accuracy as well. So mm-hmm. I can DJ but sing, and that's kind of what I'm looking to do, to take over, to kind of half DJ and half sing all mm-hmm. of those things that go down in a DJ set anyway.
Yeah.
Including my own original music as well. So that's kind of the direction I'm going in the direction of a DJ, but a singing DJ.
Yeah. Which
there's nice. A couple of guys that are instrumentalists. This guy Decadon that I'm working with, he plays guitar and he DJs, which is kind of cool. Some of the DJs bring out other singers to sing with them as they're spinning. But I'm going to be spinning, which is really just hitting play on my set. These guys are just juicing the crowd. A lot of DJ stuff can be done on the fly, but a lot of it is actually pre-programmed because the lights and the video all have to be synced. They create their own music, they produce their own music, and then they put these amazing sets together that the clubs and the festivals go bananas for. It's incredible mm-hmm. and really, really high entertainment value. But instead of just pumping fists and, you know, shouting a couple lyrics, I'm going to be singing along with these mixes as well. So that's sort of the underlying creative mm-hmm. goal. And it's ultimately the long-term goal, which I'm saying, you know, 2 or 3 years, is to be the Super Bowl halftime special.
There we go.
Where we do the Pokemon mm-hmm. theme song and the Super Bowl halftime special. You know that's a global phenomenon. Yeah. People will go crazy. I just released a Lego Mania theme song that I wrote in 1995 with my partner Russ from Aerosmith. Mm-hmm. Lego Mania, Lego Mania. But I released the full single version, a 2.5 minute with a rap section. The Lego world is also almost as big as the Pokemon world. Mm-hmm. And then at this, a couple of my original songs will make it in there. I'll do the rap from my Michael Jackson appearance at Madison Square Garden, except I will be seen this time instead of just on the side of the stage, and Michael will be projected in sing, and then I'll do the rap. And then the rest of the set is all of the commercials that I've already sung that have appeared on the Super Bowl. So I see a little silhouette of a cat. Mountain Dew, time to do the Sunshine Bowl.
Yes.
the Pepto-Bismol jingle, the Subway Eat Fresh. There's another one, an H&R Block commercial. Yeah, I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax
yes.
man.
Yes.
And then Think Outside the Bun was a Taco Bell one. That's the Coca-Cola one. You know, I'm just going to get all the brands that have already endorsed mm-hmm. the Super Bowl and sing my greatest jingle hits as well. Anyway, that's the dream for my creative future. In the meantime, I'm at events all around the world. I'm going to Belgium tomorrow for a giant Comic-Con called Fax Belgium. Mm-hmm. And then the following week at MCM London. It's kind of like the New York Comic-Con of London. Mm-hmm. Same company producing it. I'll be performing on the main stage, on the live stage Saturday and Sunday, and signing at their meet and greet zone. And then New York for a few days to visit my friends. My mom's is there as well. And then I'm hitting mm-hmm. Houston Collecticon again. And I believe Steve Aoki is going to be there again. Maybe this time he'll spin my remix. I'm going to send it to him instead of the remix that he spun before. And maybe I'll jump out on stage again and basically conduct the audience in a sing-along. You can see all the social stuff I've got going on my social media, my different art projects and different things that I've got going on creatively, but it's a Pokemon and a Lego world. We're just living in it.
we are in a world where Lego is literally worth more than the cost of gold. So
crazy, right?
Perfect. Yeah. And I guess on that note, you'd mentioned all these different ways that we're going to be able to see you in person. Did say you've got some socials. Are there any ones that you would like our fans to know about and we can follow you at so we can see more?
The Instagram is the main, is doing better than the other ones. I got Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, all Jason Page. Instagram, I just crossed 200,000, which is very good. If you follow me there, thank you so much for the follow. The most that's where I post most of the information, and jasonpage.com has all those links as well as my shop where you can buy autographed merchandise, people, or send me your stuff, because people send me their Pokemon memorabilia, mostly cards, but every now and then I'll get a plushie or a book bag or, you know, a poster or all kinds of things in the mail. And yeah, that's it. And also my music is available there. I got a little Jason Page radio that goes through some of the old Jason Page songs that nobody knows that are only there. They're unreleased jams on that radio player as well. So yeah, I'm just continuing to put myself out there in many different ways. And D-Spirits as well. I got a D-Spirits card.
Oh, cool.
I have it in here, but D-Spirits is another card game. They made a Jason Page card playable in the game. And Nostalgic TCG, which I did a theme song for as well.
That's very cool.
Lots of things happening. All available at my socials and my website.
Awesome. Well, we definitely hope to send some folks your way, and we definitely look forward to you know what you continue to do. I mean, we get to see your appearances on Instagram all the time, so it's really awesome to see how folks react to you and how happy they are to see you. And
it's amazing that the organic and real heartfelt experiences people are having are not based on celebrity; they're based on the people's experience of the art. When you see a painting, you don't think about the person painting it and dipping paint in. Just like with the Pokemon theme song, you don't think about a guy in the studio with a guitar and a band playing. You think about Pokemon. It's the underscore to the joy and experience that people have with Pokemon. And it's really organic when I sing it and release that nostalgia. So it's a beautiful thing. I have a profound gratitude and I do it as much as I can, wherever I can, because it's so valuable to people. You know, I can't thank you guys enough for, you know, I spent 4 hours recording it. You probably spent 4,000 hours with all the various components of Pokemon.
I was like, easily listening to it alone is probably 4,000, and we would just like to thank you so much for joining us here on Digital Section Pop Culture Nerdy, because I don't know if people necessarily realize how much you are a part of their lives with everything that you have done. Pokemon obviously being a big one, but like you said, like seriously, like, and when you started singing Everything Tonight, we all had instant flashbacks to seeing those commercials. So Jason, thank you so much again for coming on the show tonight. And
you got it, guys. I'm Jason Page, and until next time, keep on dissecting.